this week on The Inside Flap.
And I do have to say the culture at CIA is a little different. Like, you feel like you're constantly parrying with people.
Yeah.
And some people you don't. You can trust them. They're your friends. But sometimes you find out after the fact that maybe you should have been a little bit more on your toes.
The car stops. The driver's window rolls down. Yeah. And the sheriff sticks her head out of the window. And what I see coming out of this window.
A different story.
Long,
altogether.
Flowing locks of blonde
really?
Hair.
Really?
She takes off.
Oh, her aviator
her
glasses?
Her mirrored sunglasses.
Oh, wow.
She's got these bright, sparkling blue
oh
eyes.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
She leans out the window and says, hey, would you like a ride? Do you need a ride? I said, well, do I need a ride?
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you much for joining us. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus.
Is that a participle you dropped?
Welcome to the show. I dropped some kind of participle.
No.
Preposition, I believe.
Okay.
Oh, this is a...
You should know. I don't know.
Dropped preposition.
Okay.
Across the room... Resting comfortably in bed, wrangling with her microphone, manhandling that microphone is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
And up in Granby, home with the Killdozer, is Andrew Dowd. Andrew.
Excelsior.
All right. We got a great show for today. Welcome to
The Inside Flap.
The Inside Flap. We have book recommendations, an audio book of the week, and our special guest first. The first time we've had a three-time guest on the show. That's right. Alma Katsu, our favorite author. You know her from The Hunger, The Deep. And she's here today to, or Laura and I talked to her earlier. And she's talked to us all about her brand new book, Red Widow, which is fantastic. Such a great book. And we'll have that. We had another great talk with Alma. We'll have that conversation for you in just a second. Our show today is brought to you by IndieBound. IndieBound, celebrating independent booksellers everywhere. Make sure you're going to our website, theinsideflap.com, when you do one of your book buying. That way you can click on the link to take you to IndieBound, and not only will you be supporting IndieBound and independent booksellers everywhere, you will also be supporting our little show, our little pirate ship here, keeping that sucker afloat, and it won't cost you a penny extra. And of course, that pirate ship is The Inside Flap.
The Inside Flap.
All right, we'll get to all that in just a second. But first, I want to tell you guys about my weekend. You know, I had a great weekend. We had some good friends from Maryland came out, Tom and Dave, to celebrate my, the big 5-0. Now, for those of you, Andrew, you know Dave, and Laurie, of course, you know Dave. One thing you know about Dave is that, not this Dave.
Dave Medicus.
Talking about my friend from Maryland, Dave. One thing you would need to know about him is he has never met a casino that he did not want to stay at. So Tom and Dave whisked me up to Black Hawk, which is the little gaming central near Central City in the mountains. It's about an hour away from here where all the casinos are. We stayed at the very nice Ameristar Hotel for a little two-night stay, a little getaway. Personally, you know, I don't do a whole lot of gambling, but I did a few slot machines and certainly wagered on the old March Madness NCAA basketball tournament. And, of course, speaking of that, we need to say go Florida State as they are now for the third year in a row in the Sweet 16. We must, of course, give a mention to that. And I did win a little cash betting on the Seminoles of
nice.
Florida State. Go to Go Noles. But not a whole lot of gambling. But a good time hanging out with Tom, Dave. Good time watching basketball. Now, there was one interesting story I have from their trip up. Let me see. How should I put it? All right, I'll tell you what. You know, sometimes you don't like to hear the end of a book. You know, you don't want to get any spoiler alerts. I'm going to give you a little spoiler alert to this story. And a little teaser in that this story, it's a cautionary tale. All right, cautionary tale. It ends with me in the back of a police car. So that's your little spoiler alert for you. Okay, so, you know.
Does Andrew know the story?
Andrew knows a little bit about the story. A little bit about the story. So, I mean, I didn't want to tell him, but Tom and Dave were right there.
Oh.
And they would have been like, why aren't you telling him about this? And I'm like, well, I was going to save it for the, and they would have looked at me like, what do you mean you were going to save it to tell it to him? So I had to tell him. And I think you know a little bit about it.
I do.
Because once again, as I was on the phone with you and Tom and Dave were right there. Mm-hmm. And so I had to tell you. But you know, I don't think you know all the deets.
You know, you told me and then you hastily got off. I don't know why.
Well, they were right there. I didn't want to tell you.
I think Dave Thomas might have texted me. I'm just going to use his full name on the podcast.
Yeah, sure.
I think the other Dave might have texted me about it.
Really?
Yes, because he sent me a video of his dog.
Oh, the videos of the dog. Yeah. Because Lars never met a photo of a bulldog that she didn't want to
get. I haven't met a photo or a video.
Yeah, that was another funny thing.
Of a baby bulldog that I wouldn't want to see.
Dave and Ilka, they got a new puppy bulldog.
Yeah.
So all weekend long, Dave's getting videos. Like it's like they got a newborn child.
Yeah.
Every time he turns around, he's staring lovingly at his phone with a little smile on his face. Keeps hitting play over and over again. Like, what the hell are you doing over
there? I watch that baby bulldog video over and over again. I'm not ashamed to admit it.
It's a cute one. It's a cute one. But in any case, I picked him up Friday night from the airport, went down to Elway's Steakhouse, had a great steak dinner there at Elway's.
Did you see Elway?
We did not see John Elway. No, neither have we ever seen Mike Shanahan at Shanahan's Steakhouse. Two big steakhouses here.
We've seen Shanahan at a basketball game, though.
No, we saw Peyton Manning at a Nuggets game.
I have seen Mike Shanahan at a basketball game.
We saw John Elway. We did see. You're right. Yes. We did see Mike Shanahan
sitting near us, yes, like indeed. Or not
right,
in
not
great
too
seats.
Far away.
In other words,
no, we were shocked that he did not have front row seats.
Yeah,
courtside seats.
Court row.
So I picked them. We went to the steak dinner, and then it's getting late on Friday night. We're heading up to Black Hawk, and we take the last exit off the freeway. And literally, almost as we take the last exit to hit the Central City Parkway to go up into the mountains where the little gambling town is, we got a little, and my low gas light pops up.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's a gas station right there, but it's late. And, Tom is sitting there.
Is this the first time it's come up?
Yeah, this is the first time it came up. Okay. Tom's sitting right there next to me. He said, you want to stop and get gas? I mean, no, don't worry about it. You know, listen, it's late at night.
Seems logical.
We're gonna be just fine. It's late. Listen, we want to get up to the casino, get up to the hotel, get our room, relax. It's only, about 15 to 20 miles up the road. When this little light comes
it's
15 on.
15 to 20 miles up the road?
Yeah. But listen, when that light comes on, maybe 12 miles. I don't know. I know for a fact when that light comes on and that little ding happens.
How much you got?
I got a good 30 to 40 miles, right? And that's what I told him.
Yeah, but okay. If you double the 15 to 20 to get back down to the gas station.
Well, no, and here's the thing. We're heading up to Central City in Blackhawk, right?
Are there gas stations there?
I said to Tom, I said, don't worry about it. There's going to be plenty of gas stations.
I've never seen
a
gas station up there.
There's got to be tons of gas stations in Central City in Blackhawk.
Hmm.
So we get up there, park, have a good night, get up the next morning, and I have the great idea. I said, hey, guys, while we're up here, let me take you down to the fun little town of Nederland.
That is a good idea.
It's a great town to walk around in, kind of a hippie town. It really just kind of, it's a little town out of a, you would see it in a movie almost.
It's
very
quirky.
Quirky town, exactly. So I said, let's go up to have a little breakfast up in Nederland. So we go to the truck, and I said, we get out of the parking garage, and I said, hang on, let me get a little gas. Pull out the cell phone, type in gas stations into the Maps app. Well, wouldn't you know it, I don't know who the hell designed Central City and Blackhawk. There is nary a gas station in either of these two little hamlets, which reside right next to each other up in the mountains.
I'm not surprised. I've never seen one, but I actually am a little surprised.
Nary a gas station one, to be found.
I feel like there should be one there, right?
So my, yes, yes.
Ooh.
So I don't know, get a little higher. They even got the Central City Opera there. You know, anyway. But it's no big deal.
Opera.
My phone. Yeah, get yourself some gas at an opera. My phone tells me that there is a gas station not 6 miles away outside of town on the way to Nederland.
Sounds great.
Perfect. No problem.
So far, I'm the only judging you was okay. The decision to not get gas the first night because you had 15. But I can understand if you thought there's gas logically in a bigger
logically,
city.
You would think it'd be there in the bigger town. So we hit the open road there. And by open road, I mean twisty, windy mountain road 119, which stretches all the way up to Boulder.
Beautiful drive, though.
You absolutely spectacular. And that was another reason why I want to get these guys
so pretty.
Out so they can
out of that casino.
Get out of the casino to get some beautiful mountain views. And we're going our way up the twisty mountain road. And I said, gas station is now 5 miles away. No problem. At which point, Tom leans over and says, hey, Dave, have you ever run out of gas before? At which I pointed
out. More times than you can count.
Well, funny you should ask, Tom. Why, goodness gracious, I must run out of gas once a year. And I regaled him with the story of how we had to spend an extra night in New Mexico because we ran out of gas there. And we had to wait for hours for a AAA truck to come. And then I was just in the middle of him.
The story with your sister?
The story of Kate, my sister, in town, and we ran out of gas heading up to the Airbnb on for a pleasant weekend getaway. Mm-hmm. When, wouldn't you know it, the truck, it starts to shake, it starts to shimmy, and immediately I know, and we're going straight up the mountain here, right? Immediately I know why we've run out of gas. We have run out of gas. So I pull over to the side of the road, and when I do, Tom looks at me, he's like, ha ha ha, look at this guy acting like we ran out of gas.
Oh, he doesn't know you.
I said, no, we were out of gas. He said, I thought you said you had 30 or 40 miles before. Well, what I figured out is that because we're going up, straight up the mountain, it must have pushed all the gas to the back of the tank or something. I don't know. But in any case,
you mean you didn't even make it to the 6 miles?
No. We are at this point. I looked at we are now 3 miles outside of the gas station.
And you ran out. Oh.
Okay. So we've gone less than 20 miles and we're out of gas since my light came on. Which I think because we're up heading uphill. So I pull over the side of the road. I say, guys, this is why I run marathons. Don't worry. Dave to the rescue. I got this. Look, it's a beautiful day. Hop out of the truck. Look at that view. Look at the view. And it was just a bunch of trees, of course. But I'm trying to sell the view. You guys hang out here. I'm going to book it to the 3 miles away. Yeah, I run 7 minute miles. Boom. 20 minutes there. 20. And then at that point, I realized it's going to be like an hour. So I kind of stopped doing the math for them.
Yeah, don't do the math.
But I said, I got this. So I quickly grab my phone, grab my wallet, and I take
off.
Were
you panicking at all at this point?
1,000% panicking. I feel like an...
Did they seem shocked at you?
No. You know what? They kind of took it in stride.
Okay.
Took it in stride.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
Well, they've known Dave for like 30... actually for 40-some years.
Yes.
So
Yeah.
Exactly. They know what to expect.
I have gotten stranded with Dave, Andrew, more times than I can count on my right hand.
So I... And you do have five. Well, let it be known for the record, you do have five fingers on your right hand, and maybe you can count some lines or lifelines also.
Yeah, welcome. Yeah,
I think I've extended that lifeline or shortened that lifeline with some of those trips. So I start running. Now here's the problem: as you know, I do like to run. What I don't like to do is I don't like to run jeans.
I was wondering what you had on. Yeah,
jeans, heavy ass denim jeans. Now we're at 9,200 feet, because I checked later, 9,200 feet, so twice as much less oxygen, plus it's going straight up the mountain. So you're looking at like a 7 or 8% grade straight up the mountain, all the way to where I assume the gas station is. I see the road ahead of me, it stretches and it winds and it winds, and I see it twisting into the trees heading straight up. So I'm running. I'm immediately out of breath, but whatever, I'm trucking. And Tom later on told me, he said he was still expecting me to turn around and say, just kidding. And it wasn't until I got like a half a mile down the road and went out of sight when he realized
that I was not kidding.
But so I get a good mile down the road, sweating like crazy with these jeans. Every time I got to keep pulling my jeans up, my cell phone is in my pocket, my wallet's in, that's dragging the jeans down. When all of a sudden my watch gives a little buzz, and I look down there, and Dave Thomas texted me. He said, "Hey, the sheriff is coming to pick you up."
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, big win, big
now, right
win.
Now, Andrew, have you watched Resident Alien yet?
No.
Okay. Right now, if anyone listening has watched Resident Alien on the Sci-Fi Channel,
yeah.
I am picturing that sheriff.
Okay, yeah. You guys got to watch
Resident
Alien.
I won't say his name
because
it'll come out wrong if you haven't seen it.
Check
but
out.
You'll know what I mean.
Check out
that's
show.
Who I'm picturing.
Well, so here's what. So I'm like, great, this is awesome. So I keep running just in case the sheriff decides not to come get me. Well, I get
the
sheriff's deputy, whatever. He said the sheriff, but it's the sheriff's car. As I see pulling up behind me, I was running facing traffic, so on the other side of the road. And then the car, it's like a big like a Ford Navigator Explorer,
a
big deal.
SUV.
So the car stops, the driver's window rolls down and the sheriff sticks her head out of the window, and what I see coming out of this window,
a different story altogether.
Long flowing locks of blonde
really
hair.
Really?
She takes off
her aviator
her
glasses,
mirrored sunglasses.
Oh wow.
She's got these bright sparkling blue
eyes.
Oh
my god.
She must have been in her mid-20s. I'm not making this up.
I gotta look her up. Oh my
and
God.
She leans out the window and says, "Hey, would you like a ride? Do you need a ride?" I said, "Well, do I need a ride?" Yes, I do.
That's so funny.
Yes, I do need a ride. And she says, "Well, hop on in." And it's that point that, the spoiler alert, she shoves me in the back.
Oh, you didn't get to ride shotgun.
I thought maybe I got the ride up front. Oh, no. She puts me in the back of the cop car, and we ride to the gas station in relative silence. As she drives, well, the thing is, they got this big bulletproof glass between
I'm looking for pictures, but
between
I don't find
the. I don't know. I think she was probably a deputy. You know, I don't
doesn't
know.
Doesn't matter. They got their
Yeah, look it up. I don't know if it's Gilpin County. I didn't get a really. I'm not sure exactly what who it is, but you'll recognize
we'll
her.
Suss
by,
it out.
You'll recognize her by. The long blonde hair, the nice smile, and the bright blue eyes.
That is so funny.
Yeah. So, yeah, she tried. She would say a few things to me.
But you couldn't hear.
I couldn't hear. And
did you have a mask on?
I kept having to say,
did
what?
Did you have your mask with you?
I did have my mask with me, yeah.
That's smart. Thinking
then,
ahead for
I
the
had,
gas
I did,
station.
Yeah, for the gas station.
Now, did Dave and Tom remark upon her appearance?
Oh, there was lots of remarking upon her appearance. Oh, yeah. No, there was much remarking all weekend long about Sheriff Amy, as we came to call her, since that did happen to be her name.
Oh, that was her name?
Yep. Uh-huh. Yes.
Oh, boy.
Andrew.
So, Dave, I have to watch Reno 911.
Oh, okay. There you go. That's a good comp right there. That's a good comp. So we get to the gas station, and then I run. Now, I run. Out of that, she has to, of course, because there's no door handle in the back of the cop car. So she has to let me out of the cop car. I run into that gas station. I'm like, do you have a gas can?
That
do you have a gas can?
Freaked them out seeing a sheriff letting them. Yeah. Probably. Now, was she going to bring you back? Was Sheriff Amy going to bring you back?
Well, hang on. So I run into there, and the woman's like, I don't know if we have one or not. I'm like, please. Thankfully, they did have a gas can, a little 1 gallon deal. I grabbed it. And at that point, that's what I'm thinking. I'm like,
1 gallon.
Am I going to? Well, that's all you need. You know?
Okay.
But yeah, literally a little 1 gallon thing. Hmm. At that point, I'm thinking, do I need? Because the road, not only, you know, I ran up it, but then it went back down. And then to get to the gas station, it went down even further. So now
you're
I'm thinking.
I'm going to ask her for a ride.
I'm going to have to ask her for a ride back. Yeah. But I don't want to because it's kind of awkward.
It is awkward.
So She's in the store there with me, and I pay for it, and she's still there. She's still hanging around. I go outside to go to pump the gas. So she follows me out, and I'm waiting to see. I'm hoping she doesn't go right to her car, and she doesn't. So I do the old, are you heading back down the mountain there? You heading back? Oh, don't worry. I'll give you a ride back. Don't worry. So, of course, as soon as I start pumping the gas into it, it splashes all over me because I'm crouched down and I'm trying to be extra careful. But if you squeeze that little handle, the gas can is so small.
So now you're going to stink up her shirts,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, it splashed all over me. I fill it up. I get in there. She lets me in the back, and I'm just so self-conscious
terrible.
The whole time because I know she can. So at this point, I just start running off. Yeah, we're staying in Blackhawk. Yeah, we're doing some gambling. So I just start nervously chatting away the whole time. That's how I found out her name, Sheriff Amy. So we get back.
How did you find out her name?
Oh, I just asked her.
Oh, okay.
I said, hey, I'm Dave. I'm a teacher from Denver. What's your name? And then, you know, the weird thing is, she did pause for a second, so I don't know if she was getting ready to say, I'm Officer whatever, Officer Samansky, but no, she gave me her first name, and then we got back, and she dropped me off.
Get her last name, though, her badge number?
Should have gotten her badge number. Could have played it on the lottery. But the final caveat to the story is that after I pumped the gas, or I put the gas in, we got started, we're good to go. We head to Nederland, and then we head into the restaurant to go to Nederland. And as we step into the restaurant, I've got my mask that I had with me the whole time. You know,
oh no!
I put it on my mouth, and as I strapped the mask over my mouth and breathed in, I got a huge whiff of gasoline, like I was huffing gasoline.
Oh.
And I quickly had to turn around and run back to the truck to grab a different mask. But yep. So shout out to
Officer Amy.
Thank you so much for the ride.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody's ever up that way, look her up. Apparently, she does like to hit the buffet at the Ameristar because she was asking if the buffet was open.
Oh, really? Interesting. Was the buffet open?
No, it was not. It was not. No.
Now, Dave, so the last time I ran out of gas was about 10 years ago.
Whoa!
And I was literally, 200 feet from the gas station.
Whoa.
And I ran out of gas. And the last time I almost ran out of gas was right up there within a couple miles of where you were.
Oh, really?
Yep. And you know, the same sort of situation is I got the Blackhawk.
Yes.
I had a little bit of gas in the car, and I was actually coming to meet you two to go hiking.
That's weird.
In the park there. But that's the problem is the gas stations in that area are few and far between.
They certainly are. They really are.
And the reason I think there are no gas stations in Blackhawk is – it's a closed-in town, and if there was ever a gasoline spill, I mean, it would completely contaminate and shut down, right, the entire town, because it's all
That's a valid point. Yeah, it's surrounded
it's
by
hard to get to.
Canyon walls everywhere. Yeah.
They had it's not a laughing matter, but she lived. They did have do you guys remember where there was a woman that disappeared? They couldn't find her, and she had you know that windy road? Her car had like flipped off that road and the car had landed upside down and she was like trapped in the car for a couple of days.
Whoa, really?
Yeah. And they found her.
It's like Paul Shelton in Misery.
But, like stuff happens out there.
Yeah. Well, Tom and Dave were making all kinds of jokes that it seemed like something out of a horror movie. You run out of gas in the middle of nowhere, and this mysterious blonde sheriff shows up and whisks you away, never to be seen again.
Now, I just want to distinguish this. There is a sheriff in Lake County, Colorado, named Amy Reyes. That is not her, though. I just showed you the photo.
Yeah, oh, you're right. Yeah, no.
I think she is was the very first female sheriff, I think, in the state of Colorado.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. And she is blonde.
She is blonde. Yeah,
but
I saw that picture.
Different one.
This Sheriff Amy was much younger. Much younger.
Okay. Didn't need to say that.
Well, I know. Why would I?
Did not need to say that. We need like a feminism alarm here for a lot of this.
We'll just hit the
there we go.
Sorry about that, everybody. Listen, I'm just.
I like the way you happily said it, too.
She was also in better shape.
Okay.
Okay. Oh. All right. Okay. Why would you go there?
I don't know.
Well, anyway, that was my weekend.
That was a much better story than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Because I've run out of gas with you many times, and it's not that fun.
Not much to tell.
Nope.
Not
nope.
much to tell, but
nope.
I got
just
a good,
lot of waiting.
Got a good story out of it. Yeah. Laura, how has your week been?
You know, it was good. While you were up in Black Hawk, mm-hmm. I was here, and I got to go to Sylvia's very first marching band.
That's right. I was so sorry I had to miss it.
Littleton High School's very first football game, and they had to cancel their fall football game.
Right.
And so they're doing a few football games in the spring.
Yeah.
And so it was beyond exciting. I was so excited. Littleton High School, I apologize, but the football team is terrible. But the marching band is great. And so I got to sit behind the marching band in the stands and seeing them play and jump around and then do cheers.
There's nothing
and
like
chants.
A good marching band at a football game to
it
get everybody fired up.
It was fantastic. The only sad part is, you know, they only let two people in for a time for each kid. And
yeah,
then
each kid only
the stands
gets
weren't full
guests.
At all, only half the stands, and
right.
it was every 6 foot, and it was just two people.
Yeah.
So weren't a lot of people there to support the kids.
Right.
So that was kind of a bummer. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure it would have been so much fun to have had their classmates there and a lot of stuff, but they only had so many student tickets they even gave out.
Mm.
But I believe they're the only marching band performing in Littleton right now.
Yeah.
And perhaps in the state, Sylvia was saying. So
shout out
we're
to
lucky.
Mr.
Yeah.
Emmons, the band director over there. He is fantastic.
Yeah.
And I asked him when I was over there helping him the one day, I said, how are you able to perform and keep practicing when everybody else is shut down? He just said, I just keep calling.
It's amazing.
Just
Absolutely
keep calling
amazing.
Until they say yes.
It was so it much fun. I haven't been to like a performance like that. I've been to like some outdoor where you kind of stand around awkwardly in the parking lot
mm-hmm.
and watch your student play. And those weren't that great. This one felt like, because you were very aware that like, it's pandemic. I'm
right.
having to stand farther away than I should.
Yeah.
And it was kind of weird. But this one felt normal and it felt great.
That's great.
And it felt a little, because it was Friday night and then the lights came up. And it felt a little
Friday night
like,
lights.
Felt a little TV series. Yeah. Ish, you know. Yeah. Yeah. I had a little bit like I'm in a teen movie right now
yeah.
kind of feeling.
Cool.
It was
awesome.
Fun. It was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah. And especially because the field backs up into this like woody area. So you're surrounded by trees.
It's just
kinda,
fantastic.
Kinda
small town
yeah.
feel.
That's awesome.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, I had a great weekend. Really great weekend.
Awesome.
Yeah, did not run out of gas this weekend.
Did not, no.
I did not. I didn't have any hot sheriffs stopping by, though, so I guess that was the sad part.
Yeah, the
Andrew,
part
how
you.
Have you been?
Oh, you know, busy.
What? That doesn't sound
yeah,
like you.
And so this is the time of the year or the time of the quarter where we do quarterly planning at work. And, you know, I won't go into much detail, but basically we, for a couple weeks, we sweat and we toil to basically get everything ready, right, for the 2 or 3 days worth of meetings and to get everything squared away. Now, about 50% of the time we do this, and we basically get surprised in that apparently what we thought we were supposed to be working on, or I should say the things they told us we were supposed to be working on, it turns out that, you know, the priorities have changed. So we just spent weeks doing all this planning, only to find out that, priorities have changed, and now
did they just not tell
you?
We
need you to work on this new high-priority project.
Boy, that sounds great.
That must be great for morale around there.
Well, I mean, it really isn't. So my team were basically saying yesterday, as we wrap things up, we're ready to go, and the one team member says, boy, I sure hope they don't throw us any curveballs this time. You know, boy, I'm not looking forward to this. And then, of course, a few minutes later, my phone rings. And it's a colleague giving me a heads up that, oh, hey, Andrew, I just got out of a meeting, and it looks like they're going to give you this new project. And so yep, sure enough. And I called my two leads on my team and I asked them, and the one goes like, yeah, this one executive was talking to me. I'm like, oh my God. Just, you know, if the executive's been talking to this guy, right? I mean, that's the end of it. I mean, that's, you know, you don't talk. It's like, you know, you plead the fifth. The last thing you want to do is engage the executive in a conversation.
No, of course not.
Yeah. Do not engage.
Inconceivable.
No.
Project.
Yeah.
So,
that's funny.
And so, yep. And so lo and behold today, sure enough, you know, the project comes our way. And of course, the project is there, and there are 18 stories, like 18 pieces of work that need to be done to complete the story.
Oh, geez.
And of course, they're trying to sell me on the fact, oh, it's really not that much work. Well, if it isn't that much work, why couldn't the three other teams that have looked at this have done it?
Well, because they're buffoons. Yeah, it looks like you're the only smart guy around there.
Well, there is some truth to that. I've got a very good team. But, you know, and like you said, you nailed it. When it comes to morale, it's like, you know, what's the point? We do all this work, and these guys knew all about this project, and they wait to the last minute to spring it on us.
Mm.
So, but, you know, fun times, you know, in the office. And so I think we've got it handled. So we'll, you know. We'll see what happens. I might have some updates there in a couple of weeks.
All right.
Oh, let's
very
hope
good.
You do.
Very
let's
good.
Hope you do, Andrew. Yeah.
Hopefully you can get through it without sticking it to the man. You ever just crank up that Dolly Parton song, 9 to 5, and play it on a conference
call?
I'm sure
call he does every day.
No, I think I'd rather play the other country version. Take this job and
take this job and shove it. Oh, I forgot about that song. That's an oldie but a goodie. Is that your? You know, we never asked you, Andrew. What is your go-to karaoke song?
I have no go-to karaoke song. Absolutely not. not doing it.
Oh, Dave, I wanted to ask you, yeah. Celebrity Sheriff Amy, most resembled.
Let's see, maybe like a young blonde Julianne Moore kind of.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
So how about Paige?
Striking. I mean, literally, no, listen, I'm not trying to be
I thought
sexist
maybe
or anything.
It was, you were exaggerating
she,
for
I
the show.
I am not exaggerating.
Wow.
She could have worked as a model. This is no joke. I'm not even joking.
Are you sure she was a real sheriff?
Maybe she wasn't. I don't know.
So did she resemble Paige Spearneck, the professional golfer?
I don't know. I don't know who that is. I don't know who that is. But it was interesting as I'm sitting in the back and I look at the window. And the inside of
my God, I see who she is.
The inside of the window is just smeared with mud. And I'm thinking about whoever was in the back seat before me.
Oh.
It looked like they had tried to kick their way out of the back seat because the window was full of mud. Yeah.
The interior of the window?
The interior of the window, yeah. Smeared. It was all smeared around like they'd been wiping
sure
their
mud?
Feet on it. I don't know what it was.
So, Dave, you didn't offer her... To pat you down or anything?
All right, so we have a great guest for you this week. Yeah, you know, as she opened the door, I kind of put my hands up on the vehicle.
She didn't take it. She didn't go for it.
No such luck.
Oh, that's pretty funny. Dave and Tom are like, yeah, we're fine. Stretch, a search officer? No problem.
Yeah. All right. Okay, let's move on. Let's move on to our special guest, our favorite guest of all time. Once again, back again. Great to have her, Alma Katsu. Her new book is called Red Widow. Now, this is a dynamite spy thriller that draws you into its web of CIA deceit and deception and keeps you wrapped up in its tangled talons, cocoon-like, until you are finished with this book. So the story centers on CIA agent Lindsay Duncan. Now, she has been tasked with finding out why three separate Russian informants who are working for the CIA suddenly show up dead or missing. These are like double agents. So they're Russian assets who report to the CIA, and each one has their own person they report to. So anyway, it seems pretty clear cut that there must be a mole in the CIA, and the question is, who could it be? And it's up to Lindsay to find out. Now, I love the way Alma shows how things really work around the CIA, the fanatical research and just painstaking paperwork trails that go into investigative work. She's a former employee of the CIA herself. It's clear she knows what she talks about. And not only is she able to show that, but at the same time, she makes it just the way she writes about it. It's exciting. You know, I've never read about like someone doing all this research and just written with such urgency, and the way the work is done, it just makes for a great page turner that keeps you wanting more. Adding to this is Lindsay's backstory. She has been on administrative leave before this assignment, and one of the Russian assets that is dead was, in fact, an asset that she herself handled personally. The Red Widow of the title is another woman in the CIA whose husband is dead after going over to Russia trying to protect his own asset. This book is just a fascinating look into a world where you're constantly looking over your shoulder, wondering who you can trust, a world that rewards deceit and deception. I found it utterly compelling and fascinating, and I know, Laura, you did as well.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. I'm not a spy novel reader. Like, it's not something I go to. And love this one, especially like there was a woman main character.
Yes.
And I don't know why, but it reminded me a little bit of like the Pelican Brief or like a early good John Grisham.
Like a crackling good legal thriller. Yeah.
Like a little mm-hmm. bit like that where there's like a paper chase where right. you're on yeah. the hunt for yes. clues.
Yeah.
And I really liked that about mm-hmm. it.
Yes, indeed. She also does a great job of describing the building itself, the passageways, the basement, the everything about it. And we talked to her about that. So what are we doing, wasting our time flapping our gums? You know you're here to listen to Alma talk to you. So here it is right now, our conversation with Alma Katsu. West Virginia, mountain mama, take me
home, country road.
We're doing good. Great. We're doing great.
I loved your book, Alma.
Oh, my God.
It.
How great was your book?
I loved it you. So much.
Yeah, so good.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good to hear. Thank you.
So good.
I'll be honest with you. I was a little worried. It wasn't horror. You know, we used to get in. So I'm not going to lie. I was like, I don't know. The spy. Yeah. I guess she knows a thing or two. Apparently.
I guess she knows a little bit about it.
You know,
I don't
a thing
know.
Or two about spying
it
in the CIA.
It seemed like you know
who knew?
A lot about it.
Jesus, it's like you worked there or
it's
something.
It's like you worked there.
It's kind of crazy, huh? Oh, almost 35 years. Yeah. And it's amazing
shit.
How much it changes over time. Wow. And it's horrible in its own way. So there you go.
You know, because it did, it had, which I really loved about your book, it actually had a little bit of a paper chase feel to me. And I imagine working the CIA is a lot like that with the different documents and the paperwork and the stuff that you're reading through.
Yeah.
Yeah. Particularly because I was an analyst. And so, you know, that comes up, I think in a certain respect, that's what makes the book a little different too from maybe, you know, the more action oriented spy thrillers mm-hmm. that are out there. But even in that case, there's a lot of reading. That probably sounds pretty boring. There's a lot of reading. But part of the reason why I did that is because people always say, you know, I want to, you know, they want to feel like what it's really yes. like. And how do you figure out those things? And so I kind of wanted to show that in
mean,
a way
I,
that I could.
That's what I loved about it, too.
Yeah.
Really. I like that paper chase. That it like, you know, almost like what sometimes legal thrillers will have that, where it's like chasing down documents. And
right.
it's really fun. Yeah.
How you find those clues. Yeah.
yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so glad to hear it.
Yeah.
Of course. So what was it that made you decide to step away from horror a little bit and, you know, dive into your old career? You don't still work there, right?
No, I retired a couple years ago. Right. So, yeah, I'm free.
Congratulations. Congratulations.
Thank you. I know. It feels so good. Well, you know, in a way, it was because I always felt like I should be able to write a spy thriller.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in the beginning, I tried. And I guess I just didn't have the right instincts for it. I have the better instincts at the time for supernatural thrillers. But then a couple years ago, I was talking to my editor, and she kind of encouraged me to give it a try. And so with her help, we you know, I gave them a proposal, and she kind of helped me craft it so that we kind of upped the ante, right? So that it became trickier and trickier, and, you know, like took it to places I probably wouldn't have naturally thought to bring it. But yeah, so I'm really happy with the outcome.
You should be. Yes, you should be. Come on, take a second and enjoy it, for God's sakes.
I know. Because one of the other things I really wanted to do too, you know, if you talk to people who are in the business, a lot of them aren't crazy about how intelligence work is depicted in movies and TV. And for me, as a woman in particular, I haven't been like really thrilled with the way that we're represented. So I thought it would be interesting to write something that not only was like a little bit closer to what the job's actually like, mm-hmm. like we don't run down the street in heels with our guns waving, but also to kind of show what it's like for women. Yeah. Hopefully that doesn't scare off too many male readers.
No, I don't think so. I didn't.
No. Well, I don't know. As a woman, I loved that I was reading about a woman doing this.
Yeah.
Yay!
Yeah. I mean, I loved it. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like I think women in particular for the agency, especially if you're dealing with assets, as you call them.
Assets. Yes.
Could be advantageous to work with, you mm-hmm. know, an asset that's a male.
Right.
Well, you know, that's part of the conundrum, right? A friend of mine was telling me, who's a bookseller, was telling me about a historical fiction book she read. I can't remember the title, or maybe I shouldn't say it. that was, you know, kind of what you get in a lot of those, which was, mm-hmm. oh, it's a man's world, but we'll let this woman or these two women try, right? Mm-hmm. And she was saying that most of it had to do with them sleeping with the assets,
oh.
right? And that's not how it works these days.
I don't think you're supposed to
you
do
know?
That.
No,
you're not supposed to do that.
Kind of frowned upon and kind of ludicrous, yeah.
You get in trouble for that sort of thing. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but that's not why you get hired, right?
No.
To work at the agency.
No.
So, you know, it's that kind of thing. I wanted to show that women these days are just as professional and just as competent as the men in the field. And, you know, and hopefully women will take encouragement from that. I do hope, you know, because I hear this a lot too. I mean, it's a bit of a risk, I think, for my publisher. And that, you know, there's not a lot of contemporary female spy writers with female lead characters, mm-hmm. You know, as opposed to historicals.
Okay.
And we're really hoping, you know, that women readers, you know, who maybe they were fans of The Americans or Homeland, that they'll give it a try. Because I do hear a little bit from women, well, I'm not a big spy, you know, novel fan. And mm-hmm. I think that might be because so many of them are written for men.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
I actually have never really been into the spy novel genre at all. Mm-hmm. And you're exactly right. I think it's because it was written for men and by men. And then this one was very different for me. Very different.
Oh, yay!
Yeah. Yeah.
Yay!
And I loved it. And I was like, wow, are all spy books like this? Maybe
I know,
I do.
Yeah.
Like,
maybe we do like a spy novel. We need to get into spy novels. I don't know.
Well, you know, there's some good ones lately. Tonight I'm going to be on doing a discussion with Karen Cleveland, who also is a former CIA employee.
Oh, wow.
She's a younger generation than me. Uh-huh. She was there for a while, but she got married, had children, and had to move away from the DC area. And plus, you know, she's the primary caregiver for the kids. And so she decided she would try her hand at writing spy novels, and she's written two, and her third one's coming out this August. So
cool.
Who knows? Maybe there'll be a small, you know, cottage industry.
Oh,
there you go.
I like that.
The niche is there. The niche is there. So jump on
Let's
in.
Hope.
Yeah.
You
know,
Let's
there's
hope.
A there's a veil mm-hmm. in this book of paranoia and mistrust. Your main character, Lindsay, feels it all the time, and to the point of, like, even scanning an office and looking, well, who's sitting in the corners? Like, because that might be where a spy would sit, is in the corner. And I thought, oh, my gosh, never thought
terrible.
About that. Is this something that, as an employee of the CIA, is that something that, did that inform you also? I'm sure you didn't feel it all the time, but was that something that was in your head every once in a while?
So here's the thing. I'm sure some people who work there will disagree with me, right? Mm-hmm. But having moved between agencies and also spending time at RAND, who are the assessment people, right? Mm. You know, I look back on my experiences at various agencies. And I do have to say the culture at CIA is a little different, you know, because its primary responsibility is for what we call human or human intelligence. And that's intelligence you get from people. Mm. You know, other agencies are responsible for getting intelligence from other sources. So, for instance, MASINT is detection, sensors detect, could be chemical particles or other things in the air, right? There's like different sources of intelligence. Mm-hmm. But for CIA, it's drawing information out of human sources. Right. And so when that's your bread and butter, right, and that's what you do,
yeah,
right? Sometimes they do it to each other, right? So it can be a little bit like you feel like you're constantly parrying with people.
Yeah.
And some people you don't, you can trust them, they're your friends, but mm-hmm. sometimes you find out after the fact that maybe you should have been a little bit more on your toes.
I can see that. And in the book you mentioned, you know, Aldrich James and Robert Hansen. Mm. Were you at the agency? I think you might have been for the takedown of those two men. And what was that time like?
Well, Hansen was FBI.
Oh,
Aldrich Ames might have been slightly before me because I started at another agency and then I did a big chunk of time, about a third of my career at CIA, and then I went back to another agency. Hmm. But the thing is counterintelligence, which mm-hmm. is really what a lot of what happens in this book is,
right,
and that is you're trying to find your own people who have turned traitor. So like Aldrich Ames or Hansen, you know, you're constantly being watched by the counterintelligence people.
Wow.
And also in an overt way, right? Like you have to have training, re-up your counterintelligence training, certain things every year. They make and remake these documentaries with the same traitors over and over again. And you have to watch the videos. So it's all drummed into our heads. Like there could be somebody sitting beside you selling secrets.
Wow.
And I've known people who worked with Aldrich James and it was really devastating for them. Very sad.
I bet it was. I also thought it was interesting that Putin was referred to by the Russians in your book as the hard man.
Mm.
I don't know if they really do.
How did you have like a short list of like code names that you were thinking about having Putin listed as?
Actually, that one just popped out. Like, I don't know if you know, but I've been a social media researcher for a while. And even after leaving the agency for a while, I've been working in disinformation research. Mm. And so, you know, I've had to follow what's going on with Russian disinformation campaigns. Mm. And, you know, so I really hate him. And
just kind of bad news
really just
even
came
today.
Right out when I had to come up with a nickname for him. Yeah.
But you do have a lot of great code names in here. But I mean, what would your code name be? Is the real question. You sit around and think about that. What's your code
name? No, I didn't. Okay. So yeah, how it works is when you're undercover, you get what's called a pseudonym that is just used internally in communications.
Oh, so
and
cool.
And there's just an office that peels them off and gives you pseudos, right? So. Yeah, you could have a pseudo, and then projects get cover terms. So I use a lot of, you know, like I've used them now in other stories, so I know I'm going to mix them up. There was Pennant Rice, right, was mm-hmm. one of them.
Okay.
And, I forget. The individual assets get cover terms. Mm-hmm. So Genghis, Skipjack, I forget the other one now.
Yeah.
It's been a little while. But yep. Some agencies let you pick your own cover terms, or you can propose them, you know, as long as they're not too difficult.
Yeah.
But the agency gives you yours. You can't ask for anything.
Well, we need to come up with one for you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then I had the ones that the Russians gave to the female aide, you know, like, to be kind of demeaning.
Yeah.
Canary and doll.
Doll.
Oh, doll.
That guy is so creepy.
Oh, my God. You got
he's coming back.
Oh, I like the direction that you're going with us. Yeah. It's very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Very exciting.
Now, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say this. We actually just settled on the contract for the next book. So the second book in the series is actually not going to pick up where this book leaves off exactly. Okay. It's going to have – it could almost be a standalone, except that Lindsay comes back. And Tarasenko drops in just for a short chapter.
Okay.
But I do want to continue with where we left things because I think there's a lot of really fun possibilities.
There are so many fun possibilities with that guy. Yeah. Really, really good.
So Lindsay was also known as the human lie detector, a good trait for sure to have, in the CIA or really anywhere.
Yeah.
How good are you at spotting a lie?
Well, that wasn't my trade, but I was in a position once where I had to do recruiting at colleges.
Ooh.
And so you do get a little bit of training just to kind of help you because, for one thing, and this is going to sound terrible and I don't want people to be upset, but you got to look at it from your government's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Foreign governments are going to try to infiltrate CIA. Mm-hmm. So we would get a lot of foreign students. And, we don't dismiss foreign students off the bat, but we do have to check and make sure that they would even be eligible, right?
Yeah.
They'd have to get their U.S. citizenship, et cetera, et cetera. But sometimes they're going to approach you and you need to just feel comfortable that you're not talking to someone who's maybe trying to get information out of you for the wrong purposes, shall we say.
Wow.
So I had a little bit of training in that. But the first thing they tell you is, you can't just tell the first time you're looking at somebody. You have to establish a baseline in their behaviors.
Yeah.
And then you look for deviations in the baseline. It's certainly not an exact science, that's for sure. Like, there was a TV show that used behavioral analysis. I think it was called Lie to Me.
Hmm.
I think Gabriel Byrne might have.
Yeah, it does sound familiar. That sounds familiar.
Yeah. And I watched a little bit of that, and, what are you going to do? So I tried to make it believable in the book. She doubts herself, but there's certain tells.
Yeah, I liked it. Yeah.
Maybe you should have maybe she should play poker in the next one. Put a
She probably would be good.
A poker scene. She'd
be
a good poker
player. She's good.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for the suggestion.
There
I'll work it in. Send her to Monaco for one of the
books. Oh, man. There you go. Boy,
like
that be?
Casino Royale. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
That's really funny.
Now you say CIA, you don't say the CIA, huh? I noticed that in the book. In the book, it's just CIA. Okay.
CIA, right. That's kind of how you can tell.
I see. All right.
Because I always have said
the FBI, but you say CIA and FBI. All right. Well, now we know what we sound like. Yeah.
Well, if you were going to not say the acronym, if you were saying, I talked to... Or I don't know. It's so second nature. Yeah. Huh. But people in the intelligence community, generally when they're talking about their agency, they'll just, use the acronym.
Right. We just call it IC. We don't say the intelligence agency. So.
There you go. Thank you.
So we just say IC.
Just say IC. Yeah.
Now, did they have to vet the book before you publish it? Did you have to run it by them?
Yes, I did.
Employee, I would think so, right?
Yeah, when you get a security clearance, one of the first things they make you do the first day is sign a non-disclosure agreement that binds you for your entire life.
Wow.
That any time you write or, mostly it's writing. They're going to have to update this for the modern age.
Yeah.
I think their non-disclosure agreement, mostly writing, you have to run it. And it has something to do with the work that you did. You have to run it by them. Now, it's a little open to interpretation, right? Because I can talk in unclassified terms. I mean, basically, they're just trying to stop you from revealing classified information. And that generally has to do with sources and methods. And as you can see, I spent a year as a recruiter. So I'm very, conversant in what you can say and what you can't say and how you couch all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it can also, I've had to deal with the pre-publication review offices in two agencies for most of my career. And so, 30 years of watching the pendulum swing back and forth, sometimes they're very difficult to get anything through. And other times they're more reasonable, I would say. And luckily I caught it at a more reasonable time.
Oh, good.
I didn't have to change one thing.
Wow, for this really?
I know.
That's shocking to me.
Huh.
It's shocking to me too, but hey, I'll take it.
Yeah. Because I felt like it was inner workings is what I felt like.
I mean, it felt like you were right there.
Yeah. Like really, she's in the office. I could picture the office. She's going down these hallways.
Like you described the hallways and the basements and everything.
The basement was cool. Did you ever go down into those areas?
Oh, yeah. the basement was funny because like in most buildings, it doesn't mirror the layout of the upper floors.
Yeah.
So you can easily get lost down there. But, you know, the gyms are down there and all kinds of other stuff. Yeah. So you'd go down there. There was a hot dog machine for a while that was fascinating. It was a completely automated, self-contained hot dog machine. Because when you're working in intelligence, a lot of times there's watch centers or you have to work overnight and there's no food when the cafeteria shuts down. And so that automated hot dog machine was the only food you could get. Yeah,
that's
weird.
That's really weird.
They just got like hot dogs on rollers like a 7-Eleven?
You know, I never bothered to go down there and try it, but some people really were grateful for it.
Huh.
I'd have to be very hungry.
Yeah, you have to be really hungry.
Right, how good could it be?
No, it's not good. It is not good.
All right, Alma, it's time for our segment we call Quick Six. Six questions where we find out a little bit more about you. Here we go. Alma, what is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
Oh, my God. I'm watching The Sinner right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, yeah, the thing is I haven't finished a complete season. When I saw it on Netflix and some of my horror writer friends really liked it, mm-hmm. I decided, oh, okay, I'll start watching it. And I didn't notice it went immediately to season three. So by the time I almost finished season three, I was like, ah. So I went back and I started season one, which is even better. But I only watch it when I'm on the elliptical, so I haven't been able to properly binge it because I'm not going to.
That's really, yeah, no, we had another writer who really liked that show. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I'm going to talk to one of the writers as a potential. She's on our short list for showrunner for the Red Widow TV show.
Hey.
Oh, yeah. Let's get it done. Close the deal.
I know. Well, we're talking to a bunch of people, so maybe I shouldn't have said that.
That's
It's okay.
No, leverage.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. What fictional world or place would you like to visit?
I don't know. You know, one of the places that's really stuck with me, mm-hmm. Especially for the fantasy, you know, my earlier books, was Orlando. The book was written by Virginia Woolf, but the movie, directed by Sally Potter. I mean, it's a bit mm-hmm. old now, I guess. It's probably got to be close to 15, 20 years old. But that, you know, if I could live like that, live for 400 years and just experience all that lush, rich history, that would be pretty awesome.
That's a good answer. Yeah, I like that.
How about this? What is a top five favorite movie of yours?
Ooh, well, Orlando for sure.
No, you got to give me another one.
God. I'm really bad on the spot. Isn't that terrible?
How about The Silence of the Lambs? Do you think that was a good depiction? Jodie Foster, wasn't she in the CIA?
Was FBI.
FBI.
What a
rude. And as far as I know about FBI, it was pretty good. Mm. I mean, I like that movie a lot, too. Gosh, I don't know. What movie would I... I'm sorry. Like, as soon as people ask me questions, my mind just...
I know. It's okay. I got the same issue. How about a top five favorite book? Or a book that resonates with you?
Ooh, that's a tough one too, because there's so many.
I know, there's so many.
There's so many. I'm reading some good ones right now. I just finished Michael Corita's last book, Never Far Away.
Yeah.
Did you guys read that?
No. Got it on the list to read, though. Is that
very good. Yeah, really good. It's set in the Allegash Wilderness, which... You talk about different books. My first book, The Taker, was set in the Allegash Wilderness, too, but kind of a fictionalized one and, you know, 250 years ago. So I just had to read it, and he makes you feel like you're right there. And then, of course, the thriller aspect of it is very good, too. The protagonist is a woman. And I'm reading Joe Finder. Both these guys are going to do discussions with me for the book tour. So I wanted to
you
be, you know,
get on it. You got yeah. to
get on it.
Yeah.
So I was reading House on Fire and his last book.
Oh, I read that. Yeah, yeah. I love that book. Oh,
it's
yeah.
so
good.
Good.
Yes.
Yeah. I could just slap him. He's so good. Like every page, you can see him thinking, and it gets better and better and better.
That's a good one. Yeah. And it seemed it seems effortless, and it was fun too. It was a good one. How about this, Alma? Do you have a go-to karaoke song?
No, because I've never done karaoke.
Wow, you never.
Sorry,
have.
Really,
I know.
Never.
That's interesting.
No, I'm really boring.
Give us what would if you had gun to your head? What are you gonna go with?
Oh gosh, I don't know.
Let's see. Well, you're in West Virginia now.
Yeah,
everyone here sings Country Roads.
John,
that's what everybody does.
John Denver, Country Roads. Yeah.
You see lines from it painted on all the signs.
Oh, really? Do you really?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah, they love it here.
How's the cabin?
Fabulous. We are loving it. Aww. Yeah, almost, I guess we're about 9 months in. We love it so much, we're actually going to be building a second building.
Oh, cool. Really? Oh, for like guests.
I know.
For like
so our friends, can hang out somewhere.
That's nice.
Yeah, that's really nice. And congratulations on the Fox series. That's so exciting.
Yeah, that's exciting. Good luck.
You know, thank you. I was, I don't really know anything about television. So I learned after the fact that with the pandemic, it's been really rare to get TV deals. That this, especially, because we were talking with them starting in July or August.
Wow.
And a long time. And I thought, this is abnormal. They're just stringing me along. But then I heard, no, it always takes a long time. And then it's taking extra long with the pandemic because, like, if you think back then, nobody knew what the future held. Yeah. And so all production was shut down and the studios were just really, so they weren't in a rush to sign anybody. So now I realize, like, what a miracle it was. Yeah.
It was very exciting. And just the spice, it's just cool. Very good. We're
loved
really
it.
Happy
loved
for
it.
You. Really
we
happy.
Thank
very,
you. Thank you.
Yeah. And it's a great book. Great book.
Thank you so much.
Yep. And thanks for coming on once again. Our first three time guest.
That's
the first three time guest.
She is our first three time guest.
Yeah. Woo! Oh my God. Thank you.
The Inside Flop.
All right. It was Alma Katsu. Thank you so much to her. Once again, our first three time guest on the program. Always great to chat with her. Let's open it up.
The library is officially open.
Time for some
book reviews.
And let's start with
Laura Medicus.
All right, Laura, what do you have for us this week?
I have a book called The Slaughtered Lamb by Shauna Kelly.
Whoa.
This is guilty pleasure, urban fantasy, and it's treat yourself time.
Oh.
Treat yourself.
Treat yourself.
So, a hot young woman named Sam Quinn.
Oh, is she a sheriff in a small town in Colorado?
She is not. Might as well be. She's also a werewolf.
Really?
She owns a bookstore / bar in San Francisco, and she caters exclusively to magical creatures. Her patrons are gorgeous vampires, witches, demons, and fae.
Oh.
And one day, a dead female werewolf gets tossed on her doorstep, and Sam realizes pretty quickly that the wounds on this woman are similar to scars she has on her own body from an attack she sustained years ago.
Wow.
So Sam had a very serious attack happen a few years ago. She's built up a protective armor, just around herself. She's really wounded, actually, and a lot of the book is dealing with her kind of recovering and accepting what had happened and moving on from that. But she's also, unbeknownst to her, she's been wearing a charm in the form of a necklace from her dead mother. She didn't know it was a charm until the charm gets broken. And every magical bad guy and gal in the San Francisco Bay Area now realizes where she is. So it's kind of like she has a tracking device on her now, and they're all trying to kill her. She does have a devastatingly handsome vampire named Clive.
Ooh, hello,
on
Clive.
Her side, who happens to be, of course, a very powerful vampire. He offers her protection and perhaps a little romance. So this book is funny. Some urban fantasy doesn't really have much of a sense of humor. This one does. I also
That's not my experience with all the urban fantasy I read.
I also love the bookstore bar and its setting.
Bar.
I know. Sorry. Bar. It's set underground, and Sam's got enormous plate glass windows that separate the bar from the bay. And the bar is underwater, so that's kind of cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, maybe you have a mermaid swimming by, or a selkie, or something else. It's just cool. There are mermaids, there's dragons, there's succubi, there's other cool creatures in here. And Dave, she works with Dave the Demon.
Oh, Dave the Demon.
So there you go.
All right.
So if you have a craving, and I pretty much always have this craving for Suki Stackhouse,
yes,
check this series out.
Okay, good.
Yep, and it's the first one in the series, and it's called The Slaughtered Lamb. And The Slaughtered Lamb is the name of the bar.
Oh, what a great name mm-hmm. for a bar or a restaurant that serves lamb.
Bookstore bar.
Yeah.
Bar.
All right. Nicely done. That does sound like a lot of fun. And
it is. It's a fun book.
Recommended.
Treat
by,
yourself.
Yes. Always. You gotta make mm-hmm. sure if you're looking for some urban fantasy, make sure you
treat yourself.
Treat yourself. That's recommended by
Laura Medicus.
Okay. Well, my book this week, and I am
Dave Medicus.
White Trash Warlock by David R. Slayton. So
that's
great.
Funny.
Yeah, it's a great title for a
fantasy
book.
Fantasy there.
Well, listen. You know, sometimes listen. Well, hold on. Before you read ahead with just because it's called the title is White Trash Warlock. Sometimes we all have certain genres that we like to read around here. And what I always like to say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So once again, I have. You know, some things are tried and true, and that's why this week I bring to you yet another, and I know I beat this genre to death in the 2.5 years of doing weekly book recommendations, but you know, you got to go with what got you there, and that's why, yes, White Trash Warlock is yet another LGBTQ urban fantasy book.
Is that's it really?
Right.
Is
yes,
it really?
Yes, it is, yeah. Huh. And, of course, I'm kidding. This was my first urban fantasy, dipping my toe in
so
the,
you read urban fantasy
urban
too?
Urban fantasy world, yes.
I mean, Andrew,
I did.
Andrew possibly could have read urban fantasy.
Urban,
that is
Andrew.
Part of what he might
so
have read
Dave,
about.
Is this like the Tiger King meets Gandalf?
Good one, Andrew.
No, it is not. But that would be an interesting one. Yeah, you don't have an urban fantasy book this week, too, do you?
I do not.
Okay.
Too bad.
Well, you know, I know you have long been on the fantasy bandwagon. Laura, you've been a fantasy fan for a long time. Mm-hmm. And you guys always accuse me of never branching out. So, yes, I gave it a
did you know what this shot. Was when you started it?
Not a chance. absolutely no idea at all. But, you know, I loved this book. It was a lot of fun. It was whimsical.
Cool.
Fast-paced, magic, packed with elves, gnomes, and a scene. You know, there's a scene in this book. So this is actually a book set mostly in Denver, which was also a lot of fun.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a local Denver author, David R. Slayton.
Huh.
And there is a scene set at a place I think we all agree is a little magical itself, except for maybe the food, and that is, of course,
Casa Bonita.
Casa Bonita,
which
yeah.
isn't around anymore.
Oh, no. Really?
No.
Oh, they closed it down
during the pandemic.
Yeah. At the beginning of COVID. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they did, but it's not shuttered. I bet.
No, it's done.
It. Really?
Yeah.
Oh no!
Right, Andrew, they're out of business. Oh, it says temporarily closed.
Yeah, they're going to be. But you can't. It's like a cockroach. You can't kill Casa Bonita. And for those of you who don't know, listeners, it's a traditional.
It's been
restaurant.
Closed for over a year, though.
Hmm.
Hmm.
And
right.
they've got an indoor waterfall. They've got a show like
they have
an,
a gorilla like that a, chases people around.
A Disney style show that goes on it with a little swimming area, some cliff divers right there in the restaurant itself. This big waterfall.
Andrew, have you been there?
I've not, but my kids have been there.
Oh, I can't believe you haven't been there.
And I've read reviews, and it's basically some of the worst food known to man.
The food is unrecognizable as food itself.
It's not good.
Yeah, it's terrible food.
No, not good food.
But it's a lot of fun. And
staggeringly
they have,
bad. Like, you're like, I don't even know how it's possible to make refried beans taste this bad.
Right. They got back rooms. I mean, they got games there. And the show is a lot. They got these kids who it's like they're doing cliff diving right
they
in front
are,
of you.
Yeah.
Putting on the show. It's a lot of fun. But It was funny because in the book, the guy, now the your main character, Adam, he has the ability to see into the other realm that's all around us. So,
oh, I love stuff like that.
Oh, it's just so great. So he could kind of, that's his one power, is he can see into the spirit world, man, which is all around us.
Yeah, it is, Dave.
And I always, as I'm reading this, I kept looking over my shoulder. I'm like, well, what's going on? Is there, I mean, are there, and this guy, he would be like going up to someone's house and he'll turn on his vision and he'll see like a bunch of a grim reaper standing in front of the house, just waiting. I'm like, oh man,
I love
this is
stuff
good.
Like that.
Yeah. And, but the funny thing is, so he's in the Casa Bonita. He had never been there. He thought maybe this was the spirit world, you know, because it was so strange.
That's
like,
funny.
This can't possibly be reality. This has to be the fantasy world. But anyway, the book does center on this character of Adam. He is a guy who has a little magical power, but mostly it's that ability to see into the spirit world that coexists here with the real world. And most people in this book cannot see into that. And then you have his brother Bobby actually committed him to a mental institution years before for, quote, hearing voices.
So
they didn't, you know, of course, nobody's going to believe you. You can say you can see spirits and you can see all these people going around. No, he actually got committed into this mental institution and he's been dealing with this all his life. Now here we are years later, Adam now is living in a trailer park with his aunt in Oklahoma. And suddenly, out of the blue, here's his brother Bobby in Denver. All of a sudden, now he needs his help, as Bobby's wife seems to have gone off the deep end. It turns out that she has been possessed by an evil spirit, and now Bobby needs Adam to come to the rescue.
Fun.
Now, Laura, I know your parents live on Lookout Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, have they ever seen a dragon? Because in this book, there's a dragon that resides on Lookout Mountain.
Let me ask.
Yeah, so find out about that if there's a dragon.
Is it up
there
near Buffalo Bill's grave? Or
I don't,
what are we
you know, kind of just all around the mountain, kind of guarding over it. There's
That's
also
cool.
a reference. Do you remember the corpse flower that they had at the
Denver
Botanical
Garden? Oh, I know the corpse flower,
Botanical
sure.
Garden. Yes, this is a flower that blooms every 10 years and smells like rotten meat.
Yeah.
So there's a reference to that in this book as well. Huh. But we didn't get a chance to go see it.
No.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Andrew, did you get a chance to see the corpse flower that they had at the Denver Botanical Gardens? It bloomed for like a week a couple years ago.
No, but I've seen the one in St. Louis.
Oh, have
really?
You smelled it?
Yep.
Does it smell bad?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yep, awful. We the St. Louis has an absolutely wonderful botanical garden.
We're talking about Denver here.
Yeah, well, we used to go
we're
there
at cut
least
that
once,
part.
A, once a month.
Well, have you been to the? Have you been to the one in here in Denver?
I've only been to the one the offshoot out in the.
Oh, the Chatfield one.
Yeah. The Chatfield one, but I have not been to the main.
Yeah, they have a very nice one there, and a corpse flower there, but it's no longer there. A lot of the book focuses on the relationship between the two brothers as they try to, you know, get over the past and just, oh, that little thing where one brother put the other brother into a psych hospital. Adam is also gay and there's a little romance in here for him. So it's nice to have some LGBTQ representation, but it was very minor in the story itself. I love the world building, the unique and fantastical things that Adam can see in the spirit world. He has to work with magical creatures as they both fight together against this evil spirit that has come upon them. A spirit, by the way, that is high above the city of Denver. Although I really wanted to see into this other realm that Adam can see into, I was not able to. And as much as I tried to, it never happened. There's a lot of action in this book. Complex characters you care and root for. I enjoyed this one. White Trash Warlock. And yes, there is. See, I don't know. It's interesting that you said earlier that you don't find a lot of humor in these urban fantasy books. So this one certainly had it.
I don't know. I mean, I guess if I think about Charlene Harris, the Sookie Stackhouse, those were funny.
Oh, yeah, I read those books. That's yeah, I guess that's urban fantasy. I read those books.
So maybe I'm lying.
So anyway, this is White Trash Warlock by David R. Slayton. Check it out. That's recommended by
Dave Medicus.
All right, Andrew.
Andrew.
So I have an interesting book this week.
Yes.
And it is a book where it is kind of like space opera meets, you know, fantasy novel.
Ah.
And so
sounds like up your alley.
So the book is called Starcaster. And it is, you know, it is a space opera where magic plays a very prominent role in this book. And it's also interesting that this book looks like it's co-authored, and it is authored by J.N. Cheney and Terry Maggart. And when you look at the cover, it just says Cheney Maggart, and then I looked him up, and I basically see, oh, you know, there's J.N. Cheney and Terry Maggart. So it looks like it's co-authored. So I don't know if one of them brought the space opera and the other one brought
Oh, yeah, that might have been.
Interesting.
I could see that.
Yeah. Yeah, but the book is very well done. It is a very refreshing book. It is different. You know, it is different because it combines the genres. But I would say that the magic definitely, right, takes – it really takes the emphasis in this book. This book is more – a fantasy novel than I would say it is a space opera, because really it's really more about the magic, right? And there's a universe, and there are aliens trying to exterminate the human race. but you know, most of the details are really about the magic, and so
fun.
The book takes place there. It's an Earth-based universe. There is an Earth-based navy that is fighting a war. And it is losing badly against the aliens that are called the Nyctis. Now, the Nyctis are a squid-like creature, right? And their ships are basically filled with water. I guess they swim around in there. But the Nyctis basically are successfully exterminating the human race. And so they have us backed up against a wall, and you know, we don't understand how to fight them. You know, they are completely, absolutely dominating and wiping out in every battle that they encounter, right? And so the Earthlings are lucky to even get a probe off to let people know exactly what's happened. And even after the battle, even if they lost it, what's that?
You said probe.
Yeah.
It brings out the inner middle school in
Sorry,
all of us.
Sorry, it made me titter. Yeah.
But I didn't say alien probe.
You had the word alien kind of very close to the word probe.
They're very close enough. Close enough.
Okay. Sorry. Yep. And so, yeah, let's go probing into some dark spaces.
Thank you.
Whoa, easy. Yeah. Easy.
Yeah. So basically they have us backed up, right? And we... You know, and after we get our butts kicked in a battle, we don't even know what happened, right? They don't even understand. It's like, wow, we just got wiped out. What happened? They don't understand it. And so the two of the main characters in the book are Thorn Stellars and Kim Wixcomb. Now, they were orphans together, and they grew up as orphans, and one of the things that really helped them survive as orphans is they basically discovered their magic, right? And so they had this magic, and, you know, I guess it's an interesting story that how he discovered his magic is Thorn liked to read books. And, of course, after Lights Out, he couldn't read anymore. So what did he do? He leaned on magic to make a magic, you know, glowing orb so that he could read his books at night. Now –
cool.
Now, how often would we have liked to have had that same capability so we can sit there and read at night?
Oh, man, growing up, you know, I remember I was used to love Christmas time because my parents would put candles in the windows, these little electric candles, and I could sit there past my bedtime and read by the light on the candle.
So, the book does kind of remind me that when they were talking about that.
Yeah.
But Thorn and Kira, they're together as orphans, but then, you know, once they are out of the orphanage, they go separate ways. And so here comes Kim back into Thorn's life, and Thorn is like working as kind of like a public works maintenance guy, barely surviving in like the sewers of this planet. And so Kim finds him and basically says, "Hey, do you want a chance to join the Navy? Come with me." And decides that the Navy is better than working in the sewers. So off he goes.
And, yeah.
And so, you know, Kim, of course, she has magic. And Kim's father had magic as well. And so, you know, she's joined the Navy. And so the Navy has discovered that magic, some form of magic, is what the Nictus are using to defeat, right, the humans. And so they now realize that we need to, you know, we need to figure out how to use our magic, right? Because this is not a universe where human magic is widely known, or, you know, it's not like a basis of, or a foundation for, like, human civilization. But now it's kind of like a Hail Mary, and really is an act of desperation. They realize that magic is real, and that some people have magic, and so they basically have created a, you know, a military school or boot camp to basically train mages in the use of their magic.
Ah.
Right? And so a big premise of the book is Thorne and Kira are basically in this boot camp, and they have to go through this magic boot camp, right, to strengthen themselves and to discover and be able to control their magic. Right. And so a lot of this book is really, you know, and what's that military movie where they're in boot camp?
Stripes?
No, not Stripes.
Platoon?
I'm thinking of the
Platoon?
One that's a little more, it's a little darker.
Platoon.
Full
dark.
Metal Jacket.
Oh.
Full Metal Jacket. Yeah. Yes. So this is like, you know, Full Metal Jacket meets Lord of the Rings.
Huh.
And so,
wow. So
they're
strange.
In this boot camp.
Huh.
And it is intense. And again, this is an interesting, refreshing book where it really combines two genres, right? And, you know, it's an interesting juxtaposition. And so they're learning magic, and it is no Hogwarts type thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it, you know, it's a boot camp where you're learning magic. People get hurt. People get killed. But, you know, when you're playing with forces like this, you know, things are bound to happen. But again, humanity's pushed up against the wall. They cannot afford, right, to take it slow and to take it easy. And so, of course, it turns out that Thorne's magic is different from everybody else's magic. And, you know, so they at least got that right, or at least that's the same as a lot of magic books. But, and so most people have got one magical ability. Well, Thorne apparently has multiple magic abilities. And of course, you know, as Thorne struggles to gain control of his magic, I mean, he realizes that he can do things that nobody else can do. And the limits of Thorne's magic, right, also extend way beyond what anybody else's capabilities are. And so, you know, the book is humanity discovering magic,
huh.
Right, in this desperate hour. Thorne discovering magic in this desperate hour, but also rekindling the relationship with his friend Kira when they were orphans together. And so, you know, that's the premise of the book. And of course, it goes to where there are confrontations with the aliens. And, you know, the aliens are such that they just want to, there's no living with them. They want to exterminate us. And it really is either we exterminate them or they exterminate us. Right. It doesn't seem like there's any in between. And so, you know, a different book, a different take on a book. If you don't know whether to read a space opera or a fantasy novel, this would be the book for you.
Yeah, there you go.
It is part of the Starcaster series. And so I have read the second book in the series.
No, of course you have.
But the book is called Starcaster with a C by J.N. Chaney and Terry Maggart.
Cool.
All right. And that's recommended by
Andrew Dow.
You can scratch two cravings with one book right there, it sounds like. Okay. Means it is time for the
audiobook of the week.
And this week, my pick is Her Dark Lies by J.T. Ellison. And this is narrated by Brittany Presley. Now, we love J.T. Ellison. You can go back to episode 56 from December of 2019 when we talked to her about her book, Good Girls Lie. Mm. This is Her Dark Lies, which is also not to be confused with another book of hers, Lie to Me. I don't know what the hell she's doing over there.
A theme.
But there's a lot of books about lies.
As we've learned, it's not necessarily the writer. It is might yeah, be the
that's
editor. True.
That's right. It's not always the
writer's about, choice.
Yeah. Peter Swanson talking about how long it took them to come up with that title for his book, too. Well, one thing I do know is that she knows how to craft an entertaining thriller, which this book is, featuring another fantastic job of narration by Brittany Presley. She's quickly becoming one of my favorite narrators.
Hey, that's cool.
Yeah, and in this book, she
gets to
do... You've
read a couple, or you've listened to a couple by her?
I have, and here she does an Italian accent.
Oh, wow.
In this one.
Do you know what nationality she is?
I do not know. No, I don't know.
Interesting.
This book is a twisty, turny thriller featuring murder, deceit, spying, and mayhem, all set in an exotic locale, a gorgeous ancient island off the coast of Italy.
Oh, that sounds nice.
Yeah, and if you're looking for an intense
little escapism
thriller, yes, with plenty of action, back-breaking twists, and deep, buried family secrets that slowly reveal themselves, this is one that's right up your alley. And who doesn't love all that stuff? I mean, let's face it.
Yeah.
I love this book. I found myself always just trying to figure out where this one was going. Thought I had it figured out a couple times. But every time I was proved wrong, happily proved wrong, Ellison proves to always be a couple of steps ahead of me at every turn. The book is told from two points of view. The first being Claire from Nashville, Tennessee, who has come to this remote island to be married to the incredibly wealthy Jack Compton, a millionaire, no less. Claire, naturally, is but a lowly artist, a starving artist, although not so starving, as her paintings have been selling for big bucks recently. And now, of course, she's about to be married into this ridiculously wealthy, powerful family who happen to have a lot of secrets from their past. But then again, so does Claire. Now, even before she arrives at the island, the mayhem begins. An intruder breaks into her house in Tennessee and is shot to death. But Claire, Claire's the one who shot this intruder. However, it is Jack's bodyguard who stands up and takes credit for the shot. So as, we can't have Claire's name, good name, sullied as she's about to marry into this famous family. Hmm. The havoc continues when they arrive on the island. Skeletal remains are found that may or may not have belonged to Jack's first wife, who, let's just say, is no longer with us. And now she died under some mysterious and tragic circumstances. Hmm. And speaking of his first wife, her name is Morgan, and she is the other delicious narrator of this novel because she is speaking directly to us, the reader, commenting on the action.
That's cool.
Specifically, Claire and Jack, but she's speaking to us from the grave. And J.T. Ellison has a lot of fun with this voice as she kind of speaks snarkily about the family and about Claire and cussing them out at every turn. You know, I always enjoyed when Morgan, and she would just kind of pop up every now and then to comment on the action and add her spin to things. Added a lot of, another whole other element to the book that I really enjoyed. And the closer and closer the wedding gets, the more fracas is unleashed upon the island, including, of course, you got to have a big old storm. You know, you got to have a nice storm to help set the atmosphere.
Nice.
And what good is a murder mystery thriller without a little thunder, especially when you're on an ancient island off the coast of Italy?
Take me there. I'm ready.
Yes, the secrets slowly become revealed and everyone's motivations,
minus the murderers,
are called into question. This is a great twisty murder mystery with a lovely locale. Let us take a listen to a clip. This is Her Dark Lies by J.T. Ellison, narrated by Brittany. You know, I'm going to stop saying narrated because these aren't narrations. These are performances. I'm going to say performed by Brittany Presley.
It is hard for me to explain the flush of panic that surges through my body. It's as if I've grasped a live wire. Before she can explain further, Jack's phone rings, the 615 area code flashing on the screen. "Put it on speaker," Carmen says with a reassuring nod. "It's all going to be fine. I'll explain what they don't afterward." Jack gives me a sharp look, his brows furrowed, and presses the speaker button.
"This is Jack Compton."
A sharp male voice speaks.
"Mr. Compton,
This is Lieutenant O'Donnell, Metro Nashville Police. I'm joined by Officer Cooper. You met him on Monday. He was the responding officer to the break-in.
We did? I don't remember.
We wanted to follow up and discuss our findings. I appreciate that. My fiancé is here with me, Claire Hunter, and our head of security, Carmen Harris. What can you tell us? Who is he? Jack asks.
Okay, there you go. Check that one out. I really enjoyed that one. That is Her Dark Lies, and that is your...
Audio Book of the Week.
All right, that'll do it for us this week. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Thanks to Amakatsu once again for joining us. Always a pleasure when she comes on. That's the show for this week. My name is Dave Medicus. We'll see you next time.
Adios.
You cannot shake hands with a clenched fist. Indira Gandhi.
What a miracle it was.